Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ailish is asking to see Ben Ennis' fingernails.
There's a rumor going around in this room that you might potentially bite your fingernails and leave them on the floor in the studio.
Okay. Now, this is...
I'm just the messenger.
What is this? And I know who this is. I don't know if you want me to divulge it on the air. You kind of alluded to this before I came on. I know who this is. This guy has a history of wild accusations. Okay? This is his thing. He gets a kick out of it. He loves to talk about how the studio is filthy, which it is.
It's filthy.
It needs a total gutting. And it's been too long since it's been gutted. But no. Have I cut my fingernails in 20 years? Probably not. But no, I don't bite my fingernails at the studio, at my place of work. I do that in the privacy of my own home.
Jamie said that he's done it here.
I said
well,
there's no
disgusting.
Way I haven't.
Then it's him.
Well, here's no. Well, I don't go
in the
studio.
He doesn't even come to work.
So it's not me. But here's the thing. I'm not saying I can remember a time doing it or that it was something that I did frequently, but I've chewed my fingernails for a decade, and that's how long I've now worked at The Fan. So there's just – you're going to claim that you've never left a fingernail that you've chewed in the studio?
Like,
there's just
disgusting.
No way.
Yes. No, I'm very conscious of it. I don't like myself. Like, it's not something I'm like – I put on my resume – I also bite my fingernails. It's one of my selling
features. No, and I've been great lately. Like, if you see, like, I've got, like, my fingernails are in a pretty decent, for me, shape. In fact, I often now forget, and I have used the clippers. Like, that's how,
whoa.
That's the state, yeah. Oh, dude.
No, I haven't done it in, honestly, like, I said 20 years. It's probably closer. It's going on 30 years since the last time.
Exactly.
I cut my fingers. You know, the last time I did, I had a moment there as a child where I was like, hey, it'd be cool to be like a child actor. And my mom was like, well, you'd be a model in like Kmart flyers first. And you can't bite your fingernails.
On?
And I was like, okay, I won't. But that's the last time.
Hand model.
Oh, this is so good. I can't believe that I've known you this long. We've been friends for this long, and this never came up
before.
Oh,
yeah, buddy. There's a,
and your mom gassing you up, pumping your tires? Like, you could be in the Kmart flyers. We believe in you, and you're like, I could be.
Oh, I was in a number of different Kmart flyers. That was a dream realized, buddy.
Wow.
Do you still have those? You gotta have.
Of course
them.
I do.
Oh my god, we need this.
We gotta see a tweet of one of those later. Especially if it was your idea, like just you and you alone. I want to be an actor.
Why
did you see Macaulay Culkin and you thought you were gonna be him?
Yeah, I could be him. Well, yeah. You don't think you're saying I couldn't?
Yeah,
you're saying he has something I don't. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, talent. But yeah, so anyway, just like it's a little bit of it. But I'm not gonna pretend like I haven't ever chewed a fingernail in that studio. Was it me that's the culprit that left them in there and created a bunch? No. But I'm going to say that over 10 years at The Fan, there's just no way that I haven't left a fingernail or a boog around that stage.
Oh, my God, fancy Moses.
One of them, they're both kicking around. It's just, they're there. Listen, I'm not like you guys. I don't lie. I tell the truth, and that's the truth. It's like,
I thought I was being very forthright, very honest, but yeah, I don't do it anywhere. I would say that my car is like prime location for that when I'm in it for an hour on my way to and from work.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm just telling you both. You're both lying. You're lying to yourselves. You're lying to the audiences. I don't know what it is, but it is what it is. Okay, so what is more disgusting, that revelation or the thought of having to watch Yusei Kikuchi pitch again down the stretch for a team that literally is in a fight for their lives for a playoff spot now?
It is. Both are gross, but I think, one, we're not going to have to experience much longer, like, at all. I think this is it for Yusei Kikuchi. They have options.
You mean that was
they
it,
one
or
option.
Next is it?
What's that?
I said this is it, as in, like, his next start, or that was it?
Well, no. You know, I haven't done the machinations, but yeah, there's an off day Monday, is there not?
Yeah.
And Mitch White's already in the rotation. Ross Stripling's going to start in a couple of days here. So, yeah, no, I think that's it. I don't know why. If you can afford to get through the rotation without Yusei Kikuchi, that's what you do. Like, he's clearly not one of your five best starters right now, even if Mitch White can only throw 75 pitches. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how many pitches you're getting out of Yusei Kikuchi, and there's an 8 on the board when he departs, right? So there's no way that you're going to stick with him.
So where do you put him?
If you're going to sell to your clubhouse at all that your number one intention is to win baseball games, Yusei Kikuchi's not starting if there's another option.
Do you put him in the bullpen?
I mean, I'd give him one of those neck injuries again. Because
that sounds like you're going to try.
Oh, yeah,
and
no.
I mean, I don't want to actually hurt his neck.
Well, you could. I should clarify. Like, yeah,
I want him designated as somebody with a phantom neck injury. No, I don't think. Listen, he hasn't done enough to deserve actual physical pain. But barring that, maybe he doesn't want to play ball with that because, you know, he signed a contract in good faith. And, you know, if he really wanted to, he could screw the Blue Jays by, you know, claiming that he's not really injured and on the IL and and file some grievance. And there would be a horrible process through MLBPA. So if he doesn't want to have a neck injury, then I guess you got to put him in the ultimate mop-up role. Like, it's Trent Thornton, but Trent Thornton gets into games sometimes. The Blue Jays still have chances of winning. Yusei Kikuchi will only be in baseball games in which the Blue Jays are losing by 5 or more runs.
Yeah, that's what I said too, but here's the other option. Just cut him. Who cares? Like, it just doesn't matter. What do you mean?
I can guarantee you there's a 200% chance that that's not happening.
Sure. But here's what I'll tell you. If he was to say, I'm not doing the phantom injury thing, as I don't, like you just mentioned, why do I need to burn a roster spot on him? Sure, whatever. It might not even really matter all that much in the future. But he's not coming out of the bullpen for any type of even halfway leverage. Like, how many run lead would you have to feel? You see Kikuchi's coming
no,
in
no, no.
and
there's
you're,
no
you're good
lead.
With it.
No, the Blue Jays are never leading a game in which you see Kikuchi's
coming out of the bullpen. What about when they beat the Red Sox 28-4? You wouldn't put him in?
Yeah, that's literally what I'm talking about. That's literally the scenario. No, but that's what I mean. I go, that's literally the scenario that I can think of where he would come in with a lead. And if you're trailing by a run or two, like, no. So what, you're trailing by 3? No. You're trailing by 4? No. That's what I mean. So 5 runs. Like, I guess right now that's a more realistic thing than it has been in the past, but I just don't see the point. And I also, if this would be different too, if I thought there was a real chance of him rebounding next season, I just don't see it. Like, I don't think that this guy's career with the Jays is ever going to materialize. And frankly, I just think that the track record is kind of concrete enough that there shouldn't really be a reason for optimism. And that's why I was talking about this with Ailish earlier, Ben, but this has got to be one of the worst contracts in the history of Toronto sports. Because that, like, the first 2 years of it, you could say, whatever. Like, that happens, right? Jaime Garcia got that one-year deal that stunk. Roark got a deal that stunk. That third year, stretching him to $36 million, like, having Yusei Kikuchi money as a third-year deal instead of a two-year deal, it's nightmarish. But if you just look at this season, and we're doing the – remember last year it was, hey, the bullpen was bad, and that's why they missed the playoffs? If they missed the playoffs this year, we're going to point to those Yusei Kikuchi starts. The front office that had all this goodwill has lost a lot of it amongst fans because of this contract and the fact that, you know, they didn't really do much at the trade deadline to address the fact that they had Kikuchi outside of a guy who was a relief pitcher with the Dodgers, a long man with the Dodgers. So they supplemented him without getting really splashy, which has left that as a bigger hole than it probably needs to be right now, which has created an even longer run of fan angst and anger towards the front office. It had at least, I said, I think it had 10% of the reason Charlie Montoya was fired, because he started being really angry outwardly to the media, and the guy was losing starts time after time. He's changed the goodwill with Pete Walker in the city. People are not as enamored with Pete as they were a year ago. Like, the ripple effect of Kikuchi is massive. When you really start to step outwardly and look at it, it's really not just, oh, a fifth starter that they took a flyer on. It has really caused an incredible amount of damage for someone that really should have just been a lottery ticket.
Yeah, no, it's that spot in the rotation has single-handedly murdered the Blue Jays. And Jose Berríos hasn't been good, but miracle of miracles, Blue Jays have won a lot of games when he pitches. Blue Jays are 16-7 when Jose Berríos starts a game. They're 6-14 now when Yusei Kikuchi toes the slab. It's abysmal. And the analogy I keep making is a golf one. And you're not a golfer. You're a disc golfer now, JD. But so you can
I don't
can
like that there's
analogy.
A stigma between the two. I think that... But that ball golf shouldn't just be named golf, and that disc golf shouldn't be the one.
Ball golf is just golf, and then disc golf is disc golf. Don't call it
forms of golf.
No.
It's just golf. But, you know, you're having a good round, and you're having a bad hole, but, you know, you're able to limit the damage to a double bogey, right? Like, what? All you want is a double bogey out of Yusei Kikuchi. This offense should be good enough. They're the second best in the American League. If he's just a five and dive guy, where we talked about his start, what was his last one or two starts ago, where we went five, gave up five, which is horrible. It's awful. But you can actually come back from a deficit of that size with this offense. Instead of double bogeying, he's throwing up an eight. He's hitting seven balls in the water, right? And he's single-handedly killing your round. He's been so bad that it's... Well, and that has been the Berríos problem, too, that Berríos has been better more often than Kikuchi's... Like, Berríos has been good, and not just passable, actually good more often than Kikuchi's been good, but he's been bad just about as often as Kikuchi's been bad. But yeah, this team doesn't need the world's best starting pitching, but it needs better than the worst, and that's what they've gotten more often than not every fifth day.
Yeah, to extend this further, he's had four starts against the Yankees, and people talk about him like he's a Yankee killer because he had two decent starts against them and two times where he didn't get through, past four. Right. So, he's killed. Do you give him a Yankee start, given his track record? I go, the last time he pitched against them, he didn't get out of the fourth. But yeah, okay, sure. Let's pretend as though he should be given something. I just frankly think that it's a nightmare. And at this point, the nightmare needs to end. Because I do think that the next ripple effect is that you putting him out there is a reminder to your team of his failures. And I just don't think that... I don't think that it's plausible that those guys are able to compartmentalize that guy out on the mound and being able to go out there and perform to the best of their ability or not have it kind of weigh on their group. I just don't see it. Again, I think that guys would be trying to pick him up. We all know what it's like when there's somebody that's down around you and the energy that you have to put into them when they're really struggling, and especially when it's actually their fault, like it's his, and you have to pretend like it isn't. Woof, draining. Knowing that you're just behind in these ball games, knowing that it's changing your approach, just everything about it, knowing that, again, it reminds you of that deadline, all of it is bad. So, yeah, to me, Kikuchi's got to go. Yesterday, you gave me a call on your way home, and you're down at the ballpark again today. 2 days at the ballpark. Must be nice. I'm heading down tonight, so maybe I'll catch you on the way out. I'll swing by the station. Are you at SportsNet Grill?
No, we're up in the radio booth.
Oof, that's
annoying
really high
Ben
up,
Wagner and Arden.
I didn't think SportsNet Grill still existed.
Yeah, no, it exists. You should have the Ben Ennis burger.
Yeah.
Really? That's still there?
Yeah.
Hmm.
What do you mean? Is it still there? Of course, it's
there. Oh, Sightlines is gone, right?
Yeah, Sightlines is something.
I kind of thought they were the same thing, to be honest. Anyway,
no, SportsNet Grill still exists. I don't think it will upon the renovation of the outfield this season. I don't know though. I don't want to speak out of turn. Either way, you told me that you wanted to share something with me. You wanted to work out a take. You wanted to workshop a take, and I told you to save it for today. What is that take?
All right. No, I've done some verifying of what I thought to be true. Mm-hmm. And this is Galaxy Brain. But this is why I do it on this show and not my own, because,
You don't want to lose listeners for the fan drive, but you don't care
my
about
credibility
this.
Goes completely out the window during these hits at 7 o'clock in the morning. Terry Francona his contract expires at the conclusion of this year, and you know that he and the Guardians have this great relationship. He's been super successful there. He's had health issues, so maybe it's nothing, but maybe it's not nothing. And one thing we know for sure is this front office loves Terry Francona, and who wouldn't love Terry Francona? He's been super successful everywhere he's been. He's one of those guys in a profession in which it's very difficult to quantify what a manager does. Whatever it is, he's pretty good at it, whether it's the old school baseball or the new school version of that. Terry Francona has been successful, continues to be successful. John Schneider is the interim manager, but I gotta believe that if Terry Francona does not immediately re-sign with the Guardians at the conclusion of this season and becomes a free agent, where you don't have to give anything back to Cleveland if you go out and sign him, that he is very much going to be on the Blue Jays' radar. And maybe that ties into the whole deadline thing, that this is a year in which they would like to win, and there is an amount of urgency attached to any season in which you have Vlad and Bo before they've reached free agency. But next year is the real, real urgent season where it either
it's starting to feel like the Leafs. This year wasn't that urgent. It's the
yeah,
next
it was
year
the, it was degrees of urgency ratcheted up another level next year with either the final year of Teoscar Hernandez, or you've traded him, or the final. It's hard for me to believe that they're trading or extending both Matt Chapman and Teoscar Hernandez. So somebody will be
no shot
in the final year of their contract, and maybe with a new manager, and maybe that manager is a Hall of Famer in Terry Francona. That's my galaxy brain theory.
Boy, yeah, it's really tough for me right now with all of the things going on with the actual club to think about who's managing them. All I'll say is this off of your take. It's not like going 500 is something that's a goal for this team, but his last 18 seasons, how many times has Terry Francona had a team that finished below 500?
I'm sure quite a bit. I mean, this is a Guardians team that's the youngest in all of baseball, though, and is now leading the division. I mean, Terry Francona is a Hall of Famer. You're going to argue about whether Terry Francona is good?
Once.
Yeah, and so you're saying Terry Francona is not good. Just come out and say it if you don't think Terry Francona is good.
No, I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying in his last 18 seasons as a manager, he has had one season, even with the Guardians,
yes,
where his teams have been under 500. And that was last year, and it was 494. They were 80
and 82. Yeah, and we should add the caveat that that's a very different division than the American League East.
Who cares? Well, oh, so you mean in the American League East when he was with the Yankees and he never had one that was even close? 605, 586, 593, 586, 586, 556 was his worst, 549. I'm two World Series championships, an AL pennant. Of course you would want Terry Francona. No, why would I think Terry Francona is bad? How would you even formulate that take? Like, I don't even know where that one begins. No, I guess what I'm saying is, all I'm saying about this take is it's hard for me to think about the manager when I'm just thinking about all the roster ripples still right now. Like, I'm thinking about, you know, you mentioned the Berríos thing and how they've still found ways to win games. Well, yeah, because Berríos is having his best statistics against the worst teams in baseball. Like, Shai posted that split. We've been focusing on home road and home away. It's like, no. His ERA is almost 7 against good teams.
He was saving that one, too, right?
Like, yeah, he really was.
We were having all these stupid arguments, and he's like, I got the real numbers. And he waited to drop that on our head.
Honestly, I feel so stupid for not looking at that when there were the home and away splits, and we were going, what's the theory here? You know, how is it? Yeah. It's unquantifiable. And Shai went, yeah, actually, it's really quantifiable. I got it right here. He just slid it across the desk like a good lawyer, you know, he waited. He picked his spot. Everybody thought the trial was going
away.
Yeah.
Mr. Bunkus?
No, he pulled the Alex Jones moment where he's like, we have actually had your cell phone for the last month, and we've gone through everything, Alex Jones, and we know that you perjured yourself. And he's like, I gave my cell phone to the lawyer. So that was all of us with getting that Berríos stat. Anyway, yeah, would I take Terry Francona? Absolutely. I actually think that this is the least hot take ever. This is just kind of like, yeah, would you want arguably, you know, what, top three at worst manager in baseball with this team? Of course. To me, though, there's just so many problems with the actual roster that those are the things that I care about more. Okay, so the third year, the pantheon of bad. I guess this kind of takes me to two questions. Two questions remain for me. One is, because I do want to talk to you about Bo again and his future with this ball club. But two is, and the more important one for right now, because in case we run out of time, Do you think this team's going to make the playoffs? Like, do you think that they're going to make the playoffs right now? Because right now, if you, a lot of people think the Mariners are better than them. The Rays are getting healthy, and they can't beat Mariners the Orioles. Like, they're now 2-5 against Baltimore. They've got, like, how this game tonight feels monumental, because if Manoah gets, you know, hit hard, then we're going to be having, like, a full-blown panic in the city. They just, you know, sheltered him from his innings to make sure that Yusei Kikuchi got one more start against an Orioles team that they really needed to beat and that, again, hit him hard the last time out. Do you think this team's, like, what do you think is more realistic? Win that number one wild card and be at home, or miss the playoffs?
Win the number one wild card. I think it's at this point when you're talking about a 50 game sample, anything's possible. Like the Blue Jays could go 20-30 mm-hmm. in the final 50 games, sure. And if they do, they'll miss the playoffs. I still think the Blue Jays are a better baseball team than the Baltimore Orioles. The Orioles are a feisty bunch. Give them credit. And they have a great closer and a couple of good relievers. But
it's gonna be a really tough take if they're 2-6 against them after tonight.
Yeah, there's a lot of games still to go, and you know what? They can still lose the season series, and I'll still think the Blue Jays are a better team than the Baltimore Orioles. Okay, there's a ton of Baltimore games still to go, which is actually a good thing if you believe that you're better than the other team, and that's a team that you're trying to fend off for a wild card spot. They got the Yankees coming up, who lost again. Like, the Yankees stink right now. The Blue Jays have been through ruts like this as well, right? And it coincided at that, you know, getting swept by Seattle with the schedule opening up a little bit. But the schedule does open up after this road trip through Boston and New York, where you've got the absolutely atrocious Angels at home, the absolutely atrocious Chicago Cubs at home, and then you go on the road to Pittsburgh, and then you got Baltimore, and then you got Texas that just fired its manager. No, the Blue Jays missing the playoffs already was an abject disaster. It's. I mean, you look at the schedule, it's whatever is beyond a disaster for this team. Blue Jays should make the playoffs. I would absolutely wager lots of money, lots of J.D. Bunkus's money on them making the playoffs. But yeah, at this point, not being that top wild card is also a disaster for a team that should be the third best in the American League, considering all the moves, considering, you know, the head start they had on Seattle. Seattle only coming along basically when the Blue Jays arrived in town. That's when Seattle took off a little bit, and Seattle's held their own against the Yankees and the Astros as well. No, I do think Seattle's asserted themselves as a better team than the Blue Jays, but they're no worse than fourth best in the American League, and you add a wild card, a playoff spot in the American League, there's no way you should be missing the playoffs.
I'm not saying there's no way they shouldn't be missing the playoffs. I think that those 12 games that are coming up at the end of August against the teams that you outlined, the Sox, Angels, Cubs, and Pirates, that I don't know. It really does feel
Rangers.
To me. Yeah, well, the Rangers there too. So yeah, let's put those as 15 games. I think you got to win like 11 of those. Like, you got to win 11 of those games for me to start to feel really comfortable. I'm not sure. Like, the Rays thing is a big one for me. You've still got, I think, 7 games against the Rays, and you've got all these games against the Orioles. To me, what I think this is going to come down to is whether or not they can beat those two teams. So if you think you're better than the Rays, all right. But everyone's making a lot of noise about the Rays getting healthy at the right time. And it's not like Toronto has the best track record against that team. I don't know how much you believe on the year-over-year thing and the Trop stuff, but yeah, it's still there. It exists. I don't think that those Rays games are going to be easy. You recall last season, it sort of felt like the same thing too, coming down to the wire against
for
the Rays.
For this team, nothing's easy. There's no there's no game that's a layup for this team.
I just don't think that they're very good. Even you mentioned the whole thing about, like, they got the second best offense in the American League. It's like, nah, I don't think that's a real stat anymore. Like, I'm kind of over the whole.
Well, it is a real stat.
I'm just.
I think it's not a real stat, but yes.
Well, no, I go month by month, man. Like, that's what I do in a baseball season. I go month by month, and then we extend the sample size to not get too hot takey, but. This doesn't. I watch these guys every day. This is not a top five. This is not a top two offense in the American League. It's just not. They scored four runs against Cleveland in three games. You know, like, they were out of it last night against the Baltimore team with Kyle Bradish on the mound.
Right.
They mustered
up three
runs.
Now you are getting, like, prisoner of the moment stuff.
Okay.
Because
sure.
There's an aspect of what you're saying that I agree, and it's been part of my line of thinking to smart baseball people over the last couple of days. is that, hey, the numbers suggest that this team is, like, there's really no problems with the offense. Is that really true? Because I do think it's a very imperfect offense, and I don't think it's necessarily a right-left thing. I think they don't walk enough, and I think that their approach can suffer at times. And Joe Siddle said exactly that. Like, he told me he talked to an opposition starting pitcher who's like, yeah, no, these guys are easy to game plan against.
Exactly. They really are. I don't know why you're pushing back. I'm not saying they're a trash offense. I'm saying that they're an overrated offense, that they're not number two.
Well, okay. They've scored the second, I don't know if it's the second most anymore, but yeah, a top three amount of runs in the American League. I would say in the grand scheme of things, the things that you should be worried about, offense is at best third.
I don't know. Right now, I don't like the approach of the team, and I don't like the composition of the lineup. I don't feel good about them whatsoever. Like, I've gone through their August schedule. They've scored twice, 5 runs in a loss. They have won, I think, 9-run game, and outside of that, it's been a lot of mediocrity. And they haven't had Springer, and that's been a big part of table setting this lineup. But yeah, I just, like I said, I think that they're like you said, they're too easy to pitch around. They're too one-dimensional, and that, yeah, if I'm going to talk about concerns, I'm going to talk about all of them. And if I thought that this offense was so great that they could carry a lot of these problems, it would feel a lot different right now. But I don't feel that way. This isn't like 2015 where it didn't matter what was around the offense. You could just mash everybody. They have a lot of off nights. There's too many, you know, 40-degree days. So, yeah, no, I'm just sorry. I don't think that the offense is as elite as stating they're the number two offense in the American League. Like, I think that that is a it's factually correct. But I think everybody that watches this team right now knows that they're not a powerhouse offense and that there's not a big gap between them and the teams that they're scrapping with for this wild card spot.
Well, I don't know if we necessarily disagree.
I think you're just playing the contrarian card here. Like, you're trying to, like, play the,
no,
like,
I've told you, honestly, yeah, my opinion, and I backed it up with a couple of anecdotes, and yeah. I agree that this offense is not, it's not perfect, and it's not the one I would try to build. But again, like, if you're looking at, hey, the season ends today, and the Blue Jays, well, I guess they would be in the playoffs, but they go out meekly in the first round of the postseason, and you're thinking, boy, something needs to change here. Well, the first place would be, what happened to two-fifths of our rotation? Like, that's bad. It's the pitching staff, like, first. And then, like, yeah, way down the line, hey, yeah, our offensive profile is weird. We're too easy to pitch against at certain moments. What do we do about that? Maybe some high walk guys would be a good idea. High on base guys would be a good idea. But no, the primary issue with this team has been pitching. And by and large, while the last week of games has not looked like it, they've been able to out-hit their pitching problems. Because the Blue Jays have been a bad pitching team all season long. Like, they're a middle-of-the-pack Major League Baseball team in ERA. That's both starting rotation and the bullpen. But the Blue Jays are well over 500, and up until a couple of days ago, like, 10 games over 500, and have been basically all season long on the strength of good hitting. Mm-hmm. But no, the pitching is the number one issue, but I'm not saying that the offense is like, hey, just leave it as is, and you build around a great offense. Vladimir Guerrero's having a very good season. He's not having the season he had last year, but you know what? That might be a once-in-a-lifetime type of season. You can definitely live with what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is giving you this year. Bo Bichette has taken a huge step back, and every single season of his major league career has been a regression offensively. Matt Chapman runs hot and cold, and I guess you should have expected that out of him. You haven't gotten a ton of offense out of second base, which is something you could accept if everybody else is producing. Teoscar Hernandez was hurt a lot, but he looks pretty close to normal. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. has, I think, done incredible things with what he looks like at the plate this
season.
Lourdes
was supposed to be the guy you wanted. You know, like,
what's that?
Lourdes was the guy you wanted at the dish last night with the bases like loaded. You were like, yes, this
is
the spot.
Well, the base is loaded. He's hitting like 500.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. He's incredible in that spot. But no, I think that Lourdes is good. And you know, you've made this point a lot of times about the offensive versatility. It doesn't need to be a righty-lefty thing. It's about the walks and the offensive profile. And the one thing that I do like with Lourdes right now is he made the adjustment to become this kind of a hitter. He got rid of the power, and it's been really important to this baseball team. I think that Teoscar has done the same. And that kind of, you know, I think that's going to stem the big question, which is when you talked about Bo regressing is and how they're going to change this offense. To me personally, I think that the offensive issues are closer They're not closer to the pitching in terms of what has derailed the season, but I think that it's a higher up the chart priority than maybe some other people think. And I thought it was a higher priority going into the season, if you recall, and I've kind of stayed on that island now. But yeah. I do wonder where they're going to pivot it and how they're going to change it and whether or not it is going to be saying, you know what, we have to move off to Teoscar Hernandez because we need to make room for George Springer in right field and there's just no way to fit these puzzle pieces properly. Or whether or not it's going to be a scenario where they decide to say, hey, what if we just quietly shop Bo if we don't think that he's coming back here or that his contract demands are going to be really, really aggressive? Like, what can you get back in a trade for him this offseason, and how much can you change, like, the profile of your team? Which, by the way, yeah, his on-base percentage, you want to talk about a guy that draws walks, Bo's on-base percentage is now 300. Like, it's really hurting this team at times. He hits into a lot of double plays, and I think the myth of him with the, you know, the call, the two strikes. Oh, Bo with two strikes. You know what Bo is with two strikes? His OPS is 460. Like, I'm done pretending like this is good for him or that he's good at that. Like, it's not. Like, it's done.
I would, the Bo thing, I came on here and said that you can't change an offensive approach, which I believe is very difficult, except that Lourdes Gurriel Jr. has done it, and to a degree, Teoscar Hernandez has done it. I will say, I'll caution you on making grand proclamations about this Blue Jays team by saying this. After August 31st of a season ago, the Blue Jays lost to the Orioles. They were 69-62, and we were declaring them dead, right? Like, the season was a failure, and boy, was what a nice little 2020 weirdo 60-game season, but clearly this team is not ready for prime time. They went and had a 21-9 September and finished the season with 91 wins and a game out of the postseason, and obviously would have made the postseason with an extra game. Like, a lot of the narrative of the entire season can still be decided here.
Of course.
In the rest of this regular season.
Yeah, I don't think that anybody would push back to the fact that there's more games and things can change. I'm saying that if you're looking at the recent, if you're using the track record that's happened recently and some of the stuff that to try to project forward, it's harder and harder to see this team gets hot and wins, you know, 20 goes 21-9. That doesn't feel as realistic to me this season.
You not remember what August of last season felt like? Like, it looked like this team was never going to score another
everyone
run.
Everyone was tired. Everyone looked like they had just kind of hit a wall. I do remember it. I just think that the thing you raised with the pitching is, like, that's a harder thing to quantify for now that they don't have that. And again, tonight they've got the Manoah start that feels just more important than anything that happened last year. If they lose Alek Manoah or he's just not the same guy down the stretch, I don't know how they're going to be able to get there with this bullpen and with these starters. We do got to go because we got to get to some text and we still got something to chew on. But this was fun. And yes, I'm with you. The Jays could win games and they should get Terry Francona. Those are the takes of the day. Ben Ennis, we can listen to you later. I'll see you down at the ballpark. I'll come up into the radio booth and spoil Ben Wagner's evening. Thanks for coming on, buddy.
All right. See you guys.
See you, pal. Ben Ennis, Fan Drive. And with that, it's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Was Giannis Antetokounmpo offside yesterday when he said this?
I think anybody who asks that question that plays basketball, if he said no, he'd be a liar. You know, it's a team that won multiple championships. It's a team that one of the greatest players, if not the greatest player, to ever play this game played for. So it's a no-brainer. Everybody would love to play for Chicago. Down the line, you never know. You know, you never know how life brings it. Maybe I'll play for Chicago. But right now, I'm committed to Milwaukee.
No. I think he's not offside by saying that. I think he's an honest guy. He didn't say, yes, I want to play for Chicago. And I wish he had said, I wouldn't rule out playing for the Toronto Raptors. But I think what he's saying is just an honest statement, and I don't think anyone in the Bucks organization is hearing that being like, oh, we're in trouble. I do know that he has some big decisions down the road, though, so maybe it gets you a little bit anxious, but I don't think it was offside, if that's the phrasing. You might.
It's a little over an hour's drive from Milwaukee to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
There's a regional rivalry there, and there's certainly, I would guess, some insecurity, even now after that latest championship, about being a Buck versus being a Bull. I think it's offside.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You're under contract with the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't want to hear you say that you even think about playing for the Bulls someday. I'm sorry, dude.
Was the line a question? Like, how was it asked? Like,
it doesn't matter to me, honestly.
I don't think he just brought that up on a whim, was like, hey, you know, I love the Bulls, by the way.
No, he didn't just bring up the Bulls. Obviously, he was asked about it. I don't care. It's got, like, I'm not answering the question that way. I'm Giannis Antetokounmpo. I'm the face of the Milwaukee Bucks. You've won a championship there. Yes, you re-upped there, but there have always been rumors, or there were rumors recently about your tenure with this team and how long you would stay. And you challenged those by staying and re-upping and winning a title and winning, honestly, in one of the best ways that we've ever seen. So you can just be respectful
of... What would you have said?
Not, can I rule out playing in Chicago? There's no reason to bring that up. There's no reason to bring it up. You can just say the thing about Milwaukee and I'm a Buck. I'm a Milwaukee Buck. I don't think about playing for other organizations because I'm a Milwaukee Buck. I just don't know why you would put your... there's a difference to me between being honest and too honest. Like, yeah, honesty is always the best policy or whatever. It's like, no, it's not. Like, we all know this. If honesty was the best policy, then none of us would ever lie. And it's not always about self-preservation. It can be about hurting the people that are around you. And I just think if you're a Bucks fan, you're waking up to this going, why are you saying this? Like, what are you talking about? So now I got to think about you wanting to be in Chicago if they build a good roster. Or like, if the team struggles for a little while. I know that's the nature of being a superstar, but just having that out there, I just don't see any reason for it.
I'm not ruling out ever playing for the Lakers. They're a historic franchise, and I respect a lot of players that played there.
Same thing. I just don't see the need for it to happen this way. I think that this is kind of where we're at with the NBA, where guys, it's just so obvious and open that guys don't even care. Just imagine if the... Right now, Austin Matthews on the Leafs goes, am I ever going to rule out playing for the Ottawa Senators? No. Am I ever going to rule out playing for the Montreal Canadiens? All Montreal Canadiens, they have so many championships, so many banners. How could you not want to play for the most historic franchise in hockey? Like, imagine. Why? How would you feel as a Leaf fan? You'd be going, what are we doing here? Why are you saying these things? It's just that, to me, this is a bit of an overshare, so I do think that it's not an aggressive crossing of the line where I say this is so unforgivable or Giannis is a bad guy or anything along those lines, but I definitely think that this is crossing the line. It's an unnecessary kick to the chops of a fan base that has been nothing of supportive to Giannis Antetokounmpo, and I think it's unnecessary. Anyway, let's take a break. What is necessary is your text. So far away, 590-590. Reach out on Twitter and Instagram anytime. Your text next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Text Line Tuesday. People are really opinionated on tonight's Looney Dogs experience for yourself.
Okay, at the risk of sounding like an old, is this a Harry Styles song?
No. Okay, with the previous that? Song that brought us on was Harry Styles.
Yeah. Okay.
Who played last night?
I thought
Scotia
Josh
Bank
was
Arena.
Like all. Yeah, that's I'm aware. I just so I looked at the price of those Harry Styles tickets.
Like literally, give your kidney away.
To just to get in, to sit in the 300s, which I've never been a fan of going to shows. Like, unless it's like legitimately, the only time I've ever sat in the 300s at a show was to get into Tragically Hip, right, on the farewell mm-hmm. tour, because it has to be something along those lines for me to want to be stuck in a seat very far away at a show. Just to get in and sit in those seats was around $400 a pop on the resale market. I know Harry Styles is huge. Like, again, I'm not that old, but didn't realize he was. I have two nights in Toronto. It costs $600 minimum to get on the floor. Big. That's wild stuff. Like, he doesn't invoke that emotion for you, does he? Like, he doesn't move you that way.
I would not have paid that much money to see him. No. Like, I would have loved to see him. I think he'd probably be a great performer. All the videos
I
saw.
I'd love to see him.
But there's no way. I might have paid $300. That's a lot of money.
300?
No, I've never paid that much for a ticket, actually. For to be on the floor? Yeah.
Yeah, I'd pay you'd pay 300 to be on the floor.
On the floor? Yeah. Like, yeah, 100%.
Like, no, of course you wouldn't pay 300 to sit in the 300.
Okay, well,
I'm saying, what's the price you'd pay to get on the floor then?
$300.
Okay, so, all right. I think that's reasonable. I think that even I would consider $300 to be on the floor for your Harry Styles.
Just I've never been on the floor of a concert, unfortunately, because it's just not.
What?
Well, like, no.
Well, I guess we don't also see different kind of bands and artists. Yeah, but we also see different artists. Where
right.
It's I would say that it's a little bit more accessible for me to be on the floor at the shows I go to than, because, like, who have you seen then?
I don't know. Lots of, like, you want me to list every concert I've ever been to?
Yeah, no, just a couple. Just, like, give me a couple of
Drake,
examples.
The Weeknd, Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, yeah. Those are monsters. Those are
Those are not going to be affordable on the floor.
That's all I needed.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Those are big time high ticket items. How much is it for Fleetwood Mac on the floor though? I feel like that can't be that much.
There's a lot of people that really wanted to dish out the cash for that one that have higher amount of money in their savings. So they're a little older.
Yeah.
All right, they saw Fleetwood Mac in the 70s, and they've been saving, and they have a pension. So.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They've been saving ever since. Yeah. They were like, I think these guys are going to take off. We should make a little fund and set it aside so that we can see them in the future. I've never seen Fleetwood Mac, but I really kind of need. That's another one where, that's a before.
This was a few years ago.
Oh, I guess before they die. Before I do.
Depressing.
Hopefully.
This was 2017. Anyway. Okay. So we've got lots of texts in the text line. Let's just
we'll
get
some at 8 too.
Yeah. Let's just get one out of here. Little known fact about the Sky Dome or the Rogers Center. Is that you can take any food you want into the stadium. I once took 5 pounds of wings and a tray of sushi just to prove a point at a company ball game trip.
I got to tell you, I love that story.
Yeah.
normally, you know me. I get when it's aggressive try-hardedness, I shy away from it. To me, that's incredible. Because, I wouldn't say it's a little known fact. I think it's less known than it should be fact.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
I think you remember every time when you see someone with a cooler, you're like, oh, yeah, I forgot you could bring food in here. But you're not thinking about it.
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
Tuesday
you don't
before
think about
you go.
It on the way. You definitely don't think about it on the way. I will say that I especially feel like I forget about it because there are little tricks of the trade that you should be able to do with the food, too. Like, if you catch my drift, that I should have done since then. but that's a lot of food. And just seeing you – the only thing is that's cool the second you get in. And then once you're through the doors, you're like, this is a hassle. You know, like, what am I going to do with all this? You're giving a lot of food away. I hope you had a bunch of people at work that were down to eat all the food because otherwise, you know, it would suck to throw it all out or it would be tough to carry it around all night. But, yeah, bringing the food to the game is actually a thing that more people should do. I bring snacks with some level of frequency. Like, you know, bring peanuts, bring my own peanuts or seeds to a baseball game.
Those are like $3 at the game.
No, they're not. They're way more expensive.
If you go to the $5 dugout deals, you can get them for $3.
Yeah, what do you get? One little tiny pack?
I bring a big
I bring a big pack to the games. So it's a very different thing. But yeah, I remember to bring snacks. I'm not good about bringing food, but also like who wants to really bring food down? But yeah, I have seen people like bring in their pizza and I go, that's smart. You know, you were down the street, you grabbed a pizza, you grabbed a pie, you're walking it in with your buddies. Like that makes sense to me. So yeah, I endorse anybody that brings the food in.
Okay. This is something that gets texted in almost daily from some of our listeners, and I never brought it up on the air. The Jays need to get rid of the home run jacket and get an RBI jacket. Just Jays need to work on driving in runs, but the main narrative is a lot of people hate the home run jacket. They hate it. They say it is just embarrassing that the Blue Jays put this on, especially when they're losing 7-2. Like, grow up is kind of the narrative that we get in the text line every single day.
It's so funny to me how this team, like how these things happen, right? And Blake uses that term, the innocent climb, so much. And this team was so fun. I do believe that they should have switched it up to something different than the home run jacket. They just should have gone with a bit of a different celebration, whatever. To me, these things really, really don't bother me. Like these guys are playing 162 ball games and they're trying to find little ways to make things a little bit more fun. to me, it's a who cares. I don't think that the home run jacket represents that they're not grown up, right? Like, but all home run jackets and all celebrations like this are always a tough look when you're trailing in a ball game and you hit a home run and it's, you know, set to make it 7-3. And then they put the home run jacket on and you go, but still, what do you want them to do? Not celebrate the home run? Every team ever, guy hits a home run, you walk into the dugout and your teammates congratulate you because it's an awesome accomplishment.
And where would you draw the line at, like, okay, now we're not going to do it right now. And then, okay, we will do it later. Like, who makes that decision?
But that's what I mean. No, everybody, every team does a celebration for a home run. The Blue Jays one is just the one that you're aware of because we're watching the Blue Jays 160 times a year, right? So, okay, if you don't like it, it's kind of whatever. To me, though, it's more about how just expectations, all of a sudden people go, grow up, you know, grow up. It's like you got half the people saying these guys are still young. There's lots of time for them. And then you've got a lot of people that are like, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you're now 23 years old. Grow up, you know? And I'm not saying that they're wrong in some regards, right? I think that there's been some immaturity with this ball club at times. And it's shown up on the field. But to me, the grow up thing is more stop making, you know, boneheaded mistakes or try to mitigate them because you're always going to make mistakes. It's 162 games. It's just like it's the same old thing. How do you respond from mistakes? You keep making them over and over again, or do you start to learn from them? And I actually think that that's a big growing up thing. To me, the home run jacket is kind of secondary. I think it's a little cringy how often they do the water, you know, the
yes,
Gatorade bucket.
After every win.
It's. Yeah, to me, my personal taste is that it's a little cringy. But it's just not one of those takes that I really want to die on. You
like,
know?
I think like, it should be reserved really for, like, matters? A walk-off. Like,
yeah of
that's,
course.
That's where I would put it.
Yeah, I think that they overdo it. And I think that, yeah, having a home run jacket kind of forces you into a position where you overdo it. But I really do believe that the take, if it's something that makes you mad... Like, I don't know. I just think that there are better battles to pick, personally. Mm-hmm. But again, to each their own, I guess.
Okay. Multiple. I think at least a dozen people saying that Thrills gum they like.
Huh. Thrills?
Isn't it? I thought that was the soap gum. Is it, you know what I mean? Where you give it to someone and it tastes like soap? You know, it's in the purple pack. It is soap.
Yeah.
Gum. Are they trying to prank us? Like, I know that. I'm going to go buy Thrills. Or they actually think that it's good.
Yeah, it says rose water flavored vintage gum. Yeah, I guess some people... You know what? I bet you this kind of gum is what we talk about with pineapple on pizza, where to some people's taste profile, it tastes amazing. And then to other people, they think it's
or
disgusting.
Like
and they can't believe that... Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Where it's actually just built into your mouth. It's not a try it more or try it less kind of thing, mm-hmm. right? Like if you don't like pineapple on pizza, it's your biology. It's not about acquiring a taste. Same with cilantro. And my guess is that this gum is the same way because, yes, I'm pretty sure you're correct that this is the soap gum, that some people taste soap and some people taste amazing. But, yeah, to have dozens, I'm just shocked that there
are – I was shocked how many people texted in Thrills gum.
Well – the reason why I'm shocked by this is because how many times do you ask somebody for a piece of gum
over the course of your life? I've never once been given a Thrills.
That's what I'm saying. I've asked people for a piece of gum 1,000 times in my life, and I've offered gum thousands of times, and I've never had one person go, do you have Thrills? Or seen someone in their car with Thrills, in their pocket Thrills, at their mom's house Thrills. Like I've never seen a person. I can't even picture it in a store.
It's
so,
that purple and like kind of yellow pack.
No, I know what it looks like, but I had to Google it to remember. Like, but so I don't know. That's just a wild one. Thrills gum. Okay, anyway, keep the text coming. We got to take a break because we got to talk to Doug Kide, who is a reporter for Pro Football Focus. He just wrote a great piece on the Patriots mm-hmm. and their new offensive struggles. So we want to get into that with him. And then a couple of items from around NFL training camp, the first week of preseason. Then back into your texts before we do the wake and rake. That's all next, the next hour of the Fan Morning Show with J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, SportsNet 590 The Fan.